Hello, everyone. I'm delighted to be with you today to talk about the introduction of the treasury share regime for companies listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, which came into effect in June 2024. And also I'm going to talk about the proposed company re-domiciliation scheme in Hong Kong. During the course of today's webinar, for the first part on the treasury shares regime, I'm going to first discuss the reasons for the Stock Exchange's decision to introduce the treasury shares regime, and then I'll go through the key listing rule requirements for treasury shares, including the requirements for sales of treasury shares. In the second part, on the proposed company re-domiciliation regime in Hong Kong, I'll explain the legislative proposals under the consultation conclusions published by the FSTB in July 2024, and also talk about re-domicile regimes in other jurisdictions. So what changed in June 2024? On treasury shares? Well, in essence, the Hong Kong Exchange amended the listing rules to allow listed companies to repurchase their own shares and hold them in treasury for future resale, provided this is allowed under the laws of their place of incorporation and their constitutional documents. Whether or not a company can repurchase its own shares and the status of repurchased shares is governed by the laws of its jurisdiction of incorporation and its constitutional documents. Under the previous listing rules, however, a listed company's repurchase of its own shares resulted in the automatic cancellation of the listing of those repurchased shares. The company was required to ensure that the documents of title of the repurchased shares were cancelled and destroyed immediately following settlement of any repurchase. This prevented Hong Kong listed companies from holding their repurchased shares in treasury, even where this was allowed under the laws of their home jurisdiction. The listing rules requirements reflected the requirement under the Hong Kong Companies Ordinance for Hong Kong incorporated companies to cancel repurchased shares. The listing rule requirement to automatically cancel the listing of all repurchased shares was originally introduced to safeguard against the risk of market manipulation by listed companies repeatedly repurchasing and reselling their own shares on the market, and also to mitigate risks of insider trading in the shares with the benefit of non-public information about share repurchases and resales of treasury shares. Today, however, approximately 92% of companies listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange are incorporated in jurisdictions that permit the holding of treasury shares. These include the PRC, Bermuda, and the Cayman Islands, where over 90% of Hong Kong listed companies are incorporated. Yet all these companies were prevented from holding treasury shares by the previous listing rule requirement to cancel the listing status of any shares they repurchased. Insider dealing and market manipulation involving treasury shares are today subject to the civil and criminal provisions of the Securities and Futures Ordinance. As I'll talk about later, the listing rules also set out various restrictions on share repurchases and resales of treasury shares, which are intended to further mitigate those risks. As I mentioned, the Hong Kong Companies Ordinance still mandates the immediate cancellation of any repurchased shares, thereby preventing repurchased shares from being held in treasury for subsequent resale. The new treasury share regime does not therefore apply to the 8% of listed issuers that are incorporated in Hong Kong. However, the Hong Kong government is reportedly considering amending the Companies Ordinance to allow companies incorporated in Hong Kong to benefit from the treasury share regime. The rationale for allowing listed companies to hold their repurchased shares in treasury and to resell them when market conditions are favorable was to allow them to quickly adjust their share capital, which may allow them to reduce their cost of capital. With the implementation of the treasury share regime, listed companies can, for example, resell their treasury shares in small lots on the market at full market price as an alternative fundraising means to placings, where companies usually sell new shares at a discount to market price. Companies may repurchase shares for a number of reasons, depending on their local laws. This can include returning cash to shareholders, adjusting debt to equity ratio, increasing earnings per share, or other metrics based on the number of outstanding shares, facilitating the exit of shareholders from the company, or signaling to the market that its shares are undervalued. The requirement for listed companies to cancel repurchased shares has now been removed, and listed companies are now able to hold repurchased shares in treasury as permitted under the laws of their place of incorporation and their constitutional documents. Treasury shares also retain their status as listed shares, provided that they remain issued shares under the laws of the listed company's home jurisdiction. Listed companies wishing to hold and sell treasury shares should take advice on the provisions of their local laws regarding the holding, use, and sale of treasury shares, and make any necessary amendments to their constitutional documents to allow them to hold, use, and sell treasury shares as permitted by those laws. Treasury shares are defined in Listing Rule 101 as shares repurchased and held by an issuer in Treasury, as authorized by the laws of the issuer's place of incorporation and its articles of association or equivalent constitutional documents, which, for the purpose of the rules, include shares repurchased by an issuer and held or deposited in SECAS for sale on the exchange. A note to that definition clarifies that treasury shares can be held by a listed company subsidiary or an agent or nominee of the listed company or its subsidiary, if this is permitted by the laws of the company's jurisdiction of incorporation and its constitutional documents. For example, under the laws of Bermuda and under the laws of the Cayman Islands, repurchased shares must be held in the company's own name in order to be classified as treasury shares. PRC law, on the other hand, does not require Treasury H shares to be held in the name of the listed company, although shareholders' rights attached to shares repurchased by the listed company will be suspended, irrespective of whether they're held by the listed company or by a nominee. The listing rules do not restrict how Treasury shares can be used. Their use will depend on the laws of the company's home jurisdiction and its constitutional documents. Depending on the jurisdiction, Treasury shares can be used as consideration shares or for satisfying employee share schemes or for the conversion of convertible securities. The laws of a company's home jurisdiction will generally provide that shareholders' rights, such as voting rights and the rights to participate in distributions, are suspended for Treasury shares and reinstated when the Treasury shares are resold or transferred out of Treasury, although the requirements differ according to the jurisdiction. To ensure that Treasury shares are treated differently to listed companies' regular listed shares, Listing Rule 10065 imposes an obligation on listed companies to ensure that Treasury shares are appropriately identified and segregated. When I refer to specific listing rules, I'm referring to the main board listing rules, although the GEM listing rules contain equivalent provisions. The exchange's published guidance letter 119/24, which includes guidance on how listed companies can meet the obligation to identify and segregate their treasury shares in SECAS. The guidance letter notes that listed companies can hold treasury shares that they intend to resell with SECAS registered in the name of HKSCC Nominees Limited as a common nominee. To enable treasury shares held in SECAS to be identified, listed companies are required to hold their treasury shares in a segregated SECAS account. The segregated account can be opened by the listed company's broker or custodian, provided that it holds the listed company's treasury shares separately from the securities belonging to its other clients. The guidance letter outlines the different arrangements that apply where the laws of the listed company's home jurisdiction require treasury shares to be held in the listed company's own name, as compared to the arrangements that apply to listed companies whose treasury shares can also be held in the name of the listed company's nominee. Where the listed company is incorporated in a jurisdiction which requires repurchased shares to be held in its own name in order to be classified as treasury shares, such as Bermuda and the Cayman Islands, the company should withdraw the repurchased shares from SECAS on completing a share repurchase and register them in the company's own name in its register of members. The listed company should only redeposit the treasury shares into SECAS if it plans to resell them on the stock exchange imminently. Although the repurchased shares are no longer classified as treasury shares under the relevant laws, once legal title is transferred to HKSCC nominees on deposit of the shares into SECAS, the listing rules will treat the repurchased shares in the same way as treasury shares because they're beneficially owned by the listed company. On depositing repurchased shares into SECAS, the listed company is required to give clear written instructions to its broker and share registrar that the repurchased shares are to be treated as treasury shares under the listing rules. Pending resale of the repurchased shares on the exchange, the listed company is required to put arrangements in place to ensure that it will not exercise any shareholders' rights or receive any entitlements which would be suspended under its home laws if the shares were registered in its own name as treasury shares. The guidance letter suggests that a listed company could obtain board approval that the listed company procure its broker not to instruct Hong Kong Securities Clearing Company Limited to vote at general meetings for the treasury shares deposited with CCAS. In the case of dividends and distributions, guidance letter suggests that the listed company should withdraw the treasury shares from CCAS and either re-register them in its own name as treasury shares or cancel them before the record date for the dividend or distribution. Conversely, if the laws of the listed company's place of incorporation, such as mainland China, do not require treasury shares to be held in the listed company's name, shareholders' rights attached to the shares will be suspended under the relevant laws once the shares are repurchased by the listed company, regardless of whether they're held in its own name or that of a nominee. In this case, the listed company should hold the repurchased shares as treasury shares in a segregated account in CCAS. After completing the share repurchase, the listed company must provide clear written instructions to its share registrar and the relevant broker to update the record to identify the repurchased shares held in CCAS as treasury shares. On-exchange share repurchases are subject to various restrictions under the listing rules. When I use the term on-exchange, I'm talking about a transaction conducted on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange or on any other stock exchange on which the company is listed. First, companies with a primary listing on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, including those with dual primary listings, must obtain shareholders' approval to repurchase their shares on exchange under a specific mandate or a general mandate. That mandate must limit the number of shares the company is authorized to repurchase on exchange to 10% of the company's issued shares, excluding treasury shares at the date of the shareholders' resolution approving the repurchase mandate, Listing Rule 1006(c)(1). Listed companies are also prohibited from repurchasing their shares on exchange at a price that's higher by 5% or more than the share's average closing price for the five preceding trading days. That's Listing Rule 1006(2)(a). Listed companies' on-exchange share repurchases are also subject to various restrictions on dealing and disclosure obligations, which I'll discuss shortly when I talk about the restrictions applicable to on-exchange resales of treasury shares. A resale or transfer of treasury shares is subject to preemption rights similar to an issuance of new shares under Listing Rule 1336. This means that a resale or transfer of treasury shares must either be offered to all the listed company shareholders on a pro rata basis, or it must be approved by shareholders under a specific mandate or a general mandate. A general mandate must specifically authorize the resale of treasury shares. The general mandate limit will then apply to both the issuance of new shares and the resale of treasury shares. The limit under the general mandate on the number of new shares that can be allotted and the number of sales and transfers of treasury shares is the aggregate of 20% of the listed company's issued shares, excluding treasury shares, at the date of the resolution granting the mandate, and the number of shares repurchased since the grant of the general mandate, up to a maximum of 10% of the company's issued shares, excluding treasury shares, at the date of the share repurchase mandate. It's worth noting here that a listed company can only add shares repurchased on exchange under the repurchase mandate to the general mandate limit and not shares repurchased off exchange. If treasury shares are resold on exchange under a general mandate, the resale is subject to a maximum price discount of 20% of the higher of the closing price on the trading day immediately prior to the resale and the average closing price in the five trading days immediately prior to the resale. Similarly, an off-market resale of treasury shares under a general mandate for cash consideration is subject to a maximum price discount of 20% of the higher of the closing price on the date of the agreement for the resale of the treasury shares and the average closing price in the five trading days immediately prior to the earlier of the date the resale is announced, the date of the agreement for the resale of the treasury shares, and the date on which the resale price is fixed. For listed companies incorporated in mainland China, listing rules 1005 and 1006 only govern repurchases of shares listed on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, that is, their H shares. PRC companies' repurchases of A shares are not, therefore, covered by the requirements of listing rule 1336. Under PRC law, A and H share issuers do not need to cancel their Treasury A shares and can hold and use repurchased A shares to satisfy employee share schemes for the conversion of convertible securities or for resale in the open market to stabilize the share price. The holding and use of Treasury A shares only requires board approval. Similarly, the resale of Treasury A shares is not subject to the listing rules shareholders mandate requirement, since they're not listed on the Hong Kong Exchange. However, an A and H share issuer is required to provide information on its repurchases of A shares in the explanatory memorandum for seeking shareholders' approval for repurchasing H shares on the exchange. It also has to report its repurchases of A shares in next day disclosure returns and in its annual reports. Resale of Treasury shares through agents or nominees. So the definition of Treasury shares in Listing Rule 101, as you will recall, provides that a resale of Treasury shares by a listed company or its subsidiary includes a resale of Treasury shares through their agents or nominees. The effect of this is that the various requirements applicable to resales of Treasury shares also apply where the resale is effected by an agent or nominee of the listed company or its subsidiary. The resale or transfer of Treasury shares to connected persons is subject to the same connected transaction requirements as a new issue of shares under Chapter 14A. Treasury share resales and transfers to connected persons therefore require independent shareholder approval unless exempted under Listing Rule 14A92, which provides exemptions for, amongst other things, pro rata issues to existing shareholders and shares issued under a share scheme that complies with Chapter 17 of the Listing Rules. An on-exchange sale of Treasury shares is also exempt from all the requirements for connected transactions, provided that the connected person does not know that it is purchasing Treasury shares from the listed company. Share schemes can use Treasury shares to satisfy share grants if this is specifically allowed under the scheme rules. These schemes are treated as share schemes funded by new shares under Chapter 17 of the Listing Rules, and grants of shares under the scheme are subject to the scheme mandate limit approved by shareholders under Chapter 17. If listed companies amend the rules of their share schemes to authorize the use of Treasury shares to satisfy share grants, the exchange does not regard this amendment as a material alteration to the scheme rules requiring shareholders' approval under Listing Rule 1703-18. Listed companies are required to publish an announcement on the grant of share awards or options under a share scheme. They also need to file a next day disclosure return if they transfer Treasury shares to a director under a share scheme. Transfers of Treasury shares to share scheme participants other than directors require a next day disclosure filing only when they result, together with other events specified in Listing Rule 1325A2B, in a change of 5% or more in the listed company's issued shares since the last next day or monthly return submitted. As I mentioned earlier, the prohibitions against stock market manipulation and insider dealing under the SFO apply to Treasury shares. The listing rules also set out various dealing restrictions applicable to share repurchases and sales and transfers of Treasury shares that are intended to mitigate the risks of these activities. A listed company with a primary listing on the Hong Kong Exchange can't sell or transfer Treasury shares for 30 days after a share repurchase, whether conducted on exchange or otherwise, except with the exchange's approval. This restriction does not, however, apply to sales or transfers of Treasury shares under capitalization issues, such as bonus issues and scrip dividends, on the vesting or exercise of share awards or options under a share scheme that complies with Chapter 17, or pursuant to an exercise of warrants, share options, or similar instruments that require the listed company to transfer Treasury shares which were outstanding before the share repurchase. The Stock Exchange has clarified in its FAQs that these carve-outs also apply to a transfer of treasury shares by a listed company on the conversion of convertible securities, which were issued with subscription money settled in full before the share repurchase. This 30-day moratorium also applies to dual-listed companies. However, the moratorium requirement does not apply to the resale of Treasury A shares by a PRC company with H and A shares listed on the stock exchange and a PRC stock exchange, respectively. Listed companies with a primary listing on the exchange are also prohibited from repurchasing their shares on the exchange within 30 days after an on-exchange sale or transfer of treasury shares. Listed companies are also prohibited from reselling treasury shares on exchange at any time when they have undisclosed inside information and during the period starting 30 days before the earlier of the date of the board meeting held to approve the listed company's financial results for any period and the deadline for the announcement of those results, and ending on the date of the financial results announcement. Listed companies are also prohibited from repurchasing their shares on exchange in the same circumstances under Listing Rule 10.06.2e. Listed companies are further prohibited from knowingly purchasing their shares from or knowingly selling treasury shares to a core-connected person in an on-exchange transaction. A listed company's core-connected persons are similarly restricted from knowingly selling the company's shares to or knowingly purchasing treasury shares from the listed company in an on-exchange transaction. Where a listed company appoints a broker to effect a repurchase of its shares or a sale of its treasury shares, it's required to procure that the broker provides the stock exchange with any information it requests in relation to the share repurchase or sale of treasury shares. New listing applicants can retain their treasury shares after listing. The new listing applicant must disclose details of its treasury shares in its prospectus. However, newly listed companies can't sell or transfer their treasury shares or enter into an agreement for their sale or transfer within 6 months after listing. However, an exception from the six-month lockup on transfers of treasury shares is available for a transfer of treasury shares under a Chapter 17 share scheme. A company that has transferred its listing from GEM to the main board is also allowed to sell or transfer treasury shares as an exception to the six-month lockup requirement if it disclosed its plan to raise funds within 6 months of the transfer of its listing to the main board in its listing document, or on the announcement of its transfer to the main board, where the company transferred to the main board under Chapter 9B of the listing rules. When seeking a share repurchase mandate from its shareholders, a listed company has to send an explanatory statement to its shareholders with the notice of the general meeting being held to approve the share repurchase mandate. The explanatory statement has to set out specified information, including the number and type of shares it proposes to repurchase, the reasons for the proposed repurchase, and the proposed source of funds. Listed companies must also state in the explanatory statement whether they intend to cancel the repurchased shares or hold them in treasury. In its FAQs, the Stock Exchange confirms that a listed company may state in its explanatory statement that it may cancel its repurchased shares and/or hold them as treasury depending on market conditions and its capital management needs at the time of the share repurchases. Share repurchases conducted on exchange or off exchange must be disclosed in the next day disclosure return published on the business day following the repurchase. This must give the total number of shares repurchased, the price per share, or the highest and lowest prices paid, whether the repurchased shares are cancelled or held as treasury shares, and the reasons for any deviation from the listed company's statement of its intention to cancel or hold repurchased shares as treasury shares given in its explanatory statement. A listed company must include in its annual report a monthly breakdown of its share repurchases, showing the number of shares repurchased each month in both on-exchange and off-exchange transactions. The purchase price per share, or the highest and lowest price paid, and the aggregate price paid for all share repurchases must also be disclosed in the annual report. Disclosure of listed companies on exchange resales of treasury shares must be made in a next day disclosure return under listing rule 1006(b)(1). A separate announcement of an on-exchange resale of treasury shares is also required if the resale, together with previous on-exchange resales of treasury shares in the previous 12 months that have not yet been announced, amounts to 5% or more of the listed company's issued securities, excluding treasury shares. Where an announcement is required, it must disclose the number of treasury shares sold during the year, the total funds raised, the reasons for the sales and details of the use of proceeds. If the treasury shares are sold under a general mandate, details of the general mandate must also be given. Under paragraphs 11 and 11A of Appendix D2 to the listing rules, listed companies must disclose details of their on-exchange resales of treasury shares for cash in their annual reports. Annual reports must include a monthly breakdown of all on-exchange resales of treasury shares, showing the number of treasury shares sold each month, the selling price per share, or the highest and lowest prices received, the total funds raised, details of the use of proceeds, and the reasons for the resales. Disclosure must also be made of any treasury shares held by the listed company as at the year-end date and their intended use. Paragraph 41A of Appendix D2 to the listing rules requires the same information to be included in listed companies' interim reports. The annual and interim report disclosure requirements do not apply to the transfer of treasury shares under a share scheme that complies with Chapter 17 of the listing rules. Listed companies are required to report a cancellation of treasury shares in a next day disclosure return under listing rule 1325A(2)(b)(7) when it results alone or with other events in a change of 5% or more in the listed company's issued shares since the last monthly or next day return filed. Listing Rule 101 requires that listed companies that hold treasury shares must abstain from voting on matters that require shareholders' approval under the listing rules. Since treasury shares are held by listed companies themselves and the rights attached to them are normally suspended under local laws, treasury shares are excluded when calculating a listed company's issued shares to determine matters such as public float, market capitalization, mandate limits and size tests for transactions. They're also excluded when calculating percentages of rights to vote at a listed company's general meetings, including for the purposes of the definitions of controlling shareholder and substantial shareholder. The SFC's Takeovers Code and Share Buybacks Code are principally concerned with voting rights. The voting rights of treasury shares are typically suspended, and even if they're not, the voting rights attached to treasury shares are explicitly excluded from the code's definition of voting rights. This means that treasury shares are disregarded for the purpose of determining whether the various thresholds under the codes are met. For example, the 30% trigger or 2% creep-up for a mandatory general offer under Rule 26(1) or the acceptance condition under Rule 30.2. It also means that a listed company's repurchase of its shares will result in an increase in its shareholders' percentage holding of voting rights if those shares are held as treasury shares, in the same way as if the shares were cancelled. If a shareholder's voting rights then exceed the trigger or creeper threshold, this will normally trigger the obligation to make a mandatory general offer, unless the shareholder is not a director of the listed company, nor a party acting in concert with a director of the listed company. Treasury shares are not regarded as part of a listed company's outstanding share capital. So when an offer or partial offer is made for a listed company's securities, the offer does not need to include the company's treasury shares. Treasury shares are not considered to be disinterested shares for the purposes of the voting or acceptance percentage requirements under Rules 2.2, 2.10, and 2.11. Similarly, neither the listed company nor its nominees are regarded as disinterested shareholders under the Share Buybacks Code. Detailed guidance on the treatment of treasury shares under the SFC's Takeover Code and Share Buybacks Code are set out in the SFC's Practice Note 26. For the purposes of the disclosure of interest regime under Part 15 of the SFO, Treasury shares remain part of a listed company's issued voting shares, despite any suspension of the voting rights attached to them. This means that treasury shares must be included in the number of the listed company's shares in issue when calculating the percentage figure of a person's interest. However, there will be no change to the percentage figures of shareholders' interests when a listed company chooses to hold any repurchased shares in treasury or resells its treasury shares. A further consequence is that a listed company that acquires an interest of 5% or more of its own shares by holding those shares in treasury will need to file a disclosure of interest notice. It will also need to file further notices on any change in the percentage level of its interest. A change may occur, for example, on a further repurchase of its own shares or on a resale or transfer of treasury shares. Finally, a resale of treasury shares in the secondary market constitutes a disposal of the shares for valuable consideration. The resale is therefore subject to ad valorem stamp duty under the stamp duty ordinance. Turning now to the proposed company re-domiciliation regime in Hong Kong. So I'm now going to move on to talk about the company re-domiciliation regime proposed for Hong Kong by the FSTB and provide you with an overview of the re-domicile rules in certain other jurisdictions. By way of background, schemes of re-domicile date back to the 1980s in Hong Kong when the multinational conglomerate Jardines moved its place of incorporation from Hong Kong to Bermuda, when Jardine Matheson Holdings Limited was incorporated as the group's holding company in Bermuda. Following this, the 1980s and 90s saw a number of Hong Kong incorporated companies move their place of incorporation offshore to jurisdictions such as Bermuda and the Cayman Islands. In recent years, Hong Kong has introduced fund redomicile regimes, which allow offshore funds established in the form of a company or limited partnership to redomicile to Hong Kong as an open-ended fund company or a limited partnership fund. Then this was introduced to attract foreign funds to move their domicile to Hong Kong. However, there's no legislative regime in Hong Kong which allows companies incorporated in overseas jurisdictions to migrate their place of incorporation to Hong Kong while maintaining their legal status and the validity of their corporate actions prior to the redomicile. This is commonly referred to as inward redomiciliation. The current options for overseas companies incorporated overseas to redomicile to Hong Kong are far from straightforward at the moment. They either have to wind up the company in its original place of incorporation and set up a new company in Hong Kong, which would disrupt the overseas company's operations as the company would lose its legal identity and its rights and liabilities under its existing contracts on winding up. Or an overseas company can enter into a court-sanctioned scheme of arrangement to place a wholly owned subsidiary of a Hong Kong company with the approval of the company's shareholders and other stakeholders as the new holding company. This method involves the court, and the court procedures can be complicated, extensive, and costly. And also, this may not provide a complete exit, as the company may be subject to the laws of both Hong Kong and the original place of domicile. The FSTB is therefore proposing amendments to the Hong Kong Companies Ordinance to introduce an inward re-domicile regime that's straightforward and cost-effective. The FSTB's consultation conclusions on its proposed regime, published in July 2024, said that its proposals had received wide support. The proposed regime would be administered by the Registrar of Companies, who would approve or reject applications for re-domicile to Hong Kong. In the consultation paper, the FSTB notes the opportunities the proposed regime offers for overseas incorporated companies that are economically active in Hong Kong to align their place of incorporation with the geographic location of their business activities while taking advantage of Hong Kong's high corporate governance standards and leading capital markets. Other factors highlighted by the Secretary for the FSTB as likely to make Hong Kong's proposed inward redomicile regime attractive for offshore companies are that more than 140 jurisdictions have accepted the OECD BEPS 2.0 proposals, which mandate large multinational enterprises to pay a global minimum tax of at least 15% on income earned by their constituent entities in every jurisdiction where they operate to reduce base erosion and profit shifting risks resulting from the digitalization of the economy. Another relevant factor is that some low and no tax jurisdictions, such as Bermuda and the Cayman Islands, have increased their economic substance requirements and compliance costs in recent years, making them less attractive. According to the consultation documents, one of the main aims of the proposed inward redomicile regime is to allow for continuity of the company's business rights and legal identity while avoiding complex and expensive legal processes. Under the proposed regime, the legal identity of redomiciled companies will be preserved, and the redomicile process would not create a new legal entity. This would mean that all property rights, obligations, and contracts entered into would still be effective against redomiciled companies, even though they were accrued prior to the redomicile. Additionally, redomiciled companies will benefit from the same rights and be subject to the same obligations under Hong Kong company law as other Hong Kong incorporated companies. The FSTB further clarified that these obligations include appointing a company secretary under Section 474 of the Companies Ordinance, which may not be required under the law of the original place of domicile of the company. The FSTB also confirmed in the consultation conclusions that an outward redomicile regime will not be introduced at this stage, as the FSTB thinks that it is not aware of any demand for redomicile from Hong Kong to overseas jurisdictions. The FSTB will continue to monitor the merits of an outward redomicile regime and its potential impact on the development of the Hong Kong markets. Under the proposed regime, the company must currently be in the same or substantially the same form as the types of companies that can be incorporated under the Hong Kong Companies Ordinance. Given the aim of preserving the legal identity of the redomiciled company, the FSTB clarified that companies are not permitted to change their company type after redomicile to Hong Kong. In the consultation paper, the FSTB originally intended to extend this regime to cover all five types of companies under the Companies Ordinance. However, according to the consultation conclusions, it's proposed that only four types of companies will be permitted to take advantage of the redomicile regime. They are private companies limited by shares, public companies limited by shares, private unlimited companies with a share capital, and public unlimited companies with a share capital. Companies limited by guarantee without a share capital would not be eligible for the proposed regime, as the FSTB noted in the consultation conclusions that these companies are usually non-profit-making organizations and there is no demand for the redomicile of these companies. Notwithstanding the limit on the type of eligible companies, applicant companies are not subject to an economic substance test under the proposed regime. The FSTB stated in the consultation conclusions that it intends the redomicile regime to be accessible to a wide range of companies of various hierarchies, including holding companies. It also observed that economic substance tests are not common among other jurisdictions that allow inward redomicile. Accordingly, companies would only be required to meet the requirements on the nature of the company and other eligibility requirements, which would include a solvency requirement, without being subject to minimum economic substance thresholds. The FSTB has set out requirements that the Registrar of Companies would consider when processing redomicile applications. First, under the proposed regime, companies would need to meet requirements in relation to legal compliance and company age. The law of the company's original place of domicile must allow outward redomicile to other jurisdictions. For example, companies originally incorporated in the Cayman Islands may be eligible for this regime, as the Cayman Limited Liability Companies Act permits outwards redomicile, whereas Singapore does not have an outward redomicile regime. Companies must also fulfill all the requirements for outward redomicile under the laws of the original place of incorporation. These may include shareholder approval, creditor notification, and other approval requirements. Additionally, the company must have been incorporated for at least one financial year before submitting an application for redomicile to Hong Kong. Second, the Registrar of Companies will consider the integrity of the applicant company. In particular, there must be no intention to use the redomiciled company for unlawful purposes or for engaging in activities that are against the public interest or would endanger national security. Under the proposed regime, redomiciling companies would also have to comply with the registration and incorporation requirements under the company's ordinance. The proposed regime also requires that a company must be solvent and not in liquidation to apply for redomicile. The company must submit financial statements and other documents to prove the company's solvency. I'll talk about the documents that would need to be submitted with a company's application for redomicile in a moment. Under the proposed regime, the application for redomicile must be made in good faith, and the arrangement must not be intended to defraud the company's creditors. The company's redomicile would have to be approved by its members. If neither the law of the original place of domicile nor the constitutional documents of the company require members to approve the company's redomicile, then the redomicile must be approved by way of a special resolution passed by at least 75% of the members entitled to vote. As part of the application process, companies will need to submit a number of documents to demonstrate that they meet the eligibility requirements for redomicile. First, the company must submit a duly completed and signed application form. Applicant companies would be required to provide the following information in the application form: the company's original and proposed name, the company's original place of incorporation, whether the company is a registered non-Hong Kong company under Part 16 of the Companies Ordinance, the company type, the proposed registered office address, particulars of the proposed directors and company secretary, and details of the share capital and shareholders. Second, the company must submit a copy of the articles of association that the redomiciled company proposes to adopt. Third, a certified copy of the certificate of incorporation of the company issued under the law of its original place of incorporation must be submitted. If the company's undergone redomicile before, the certificate of registration must be submitted. Fourth, the company must also submit a certified copy of the company's constitutional documents in its original place of incorporation. This may be the company's charter, statute, constitution, memorandum, or articles of association, depending on where the company was originally incorporated. Fifth, to prove that the requirement for members' approval has been met, a certified copy of the resolution approving the company's redomicile passed by at least 75% of the eligible members passed at a meeting or in writing must be submitted to the Registrar of Companies. The FSTB has said that this document is required only if neither the law of the original place of domicile or the constitutional documents of the company require members' approval of the company's redomicile. Sixth, applicants would need to submit a legal opinion from a legal practitioner qualified in the original place of domiciliation. This would be required to confirm various matters, including that the company is duly registered in its original place of domicile, that the proposed redomicile is allowed under the law of the original place of domicile, the company type in the original place of domicile, and the proposed company type subsequent to redomicile, the company's solvency, that the company has obtained the approval of its members, the intended name of the redomiciled company, and adoption of the proposed articles of association submitted with the application. Seventh, the company is also required to submit its latest financial statements or audited financial statements containing financial information up to a date that is not more than 12 months before the application. In the consultation conclusions, the FSTB relaxed the requirement for the financial statements to be audited if the laws of the original place of domiciliation, the rules of the relevant stock exchange, or other similar regulatory rules do not require audited financial statements to be prepared. The FSTB also noted that under the company's ordinance, companies must prepare audited financial statements annually after successful redomicile to Hong Kong. Lastly, the company must also submit a certificate signed by a director confirming that the company is duly registered in its original place of domicile and its solvency. The certificate should also confirm that the requisite member's approval has been duly obtained and explain the intention behind the proposed redomicile. The list of documents required to be submitted as set out in the consultation paper also includes other documents, such as notice to the Business Registration Office, business registration fee, and an application fee. The FSTB also noted in the consultation conclusions that the one-stop business registration arrangement between the company's registry and the Inland Revenue Department will apply to re-domicile applications. All application documents should be addressed to the Registrar of Companies. Although the processing time for applications will vary according to the type and circumstances of the company, the FSTB expects that approvals will generally be granted within 2 weeks of receipt of all the required application documents. According to the consultation documents, the tax obligations of the company in its original place of domicile will not be affected by the re-domicile process. This prevents companies from using the company re-domicile regime as a method of tax evasion. The re-domiciled company's liability to Hong Kong profits tax will also remain unchanged. This is because the position under the Inland Revenue Ordinance is that, irrespective of the place of incorporation or tax residency, profits tax is charged on profits arising in or deriving from Hong Kong, from a trade, professional business carried on in Hong Kong. However, the FSTB is proposing to amend the Inland Revenue Ordinance to allow the Inland Revenue Department to address transitional tax matters, such as fair deduction for trading stock, specified types of expenditures, and depreciation allowances. The FSTB has said that it will propose comprehensive amendments in due course and will reference the arrangements adopted by other jurisdictions during the drafting process. To eliminate double taxation, the FSTB proposes to provide re-domiciled companies with unilateral tax credits for tax payable on actual profits derived in Hong Kong after re-domicile, if similar profits have been taxed in an unrealized form in the original place of domicile at the time of exit. As regards stamp duty implications, the FSTB has said that since the re-domicile process will not generally involve the transfer of the company's assets, it should not give rise to a charge to Hong Kong stamp duty. The FSTB has not, however, addressed whether after re-domicile, a transfer of the re-domiciled company shares will attract Hong Kong stamp duty. I think we would assume that they would. The FSTB expects that many of the companies that will apply to re-domicile to Hong Kong will be non-Hong Kong companies with an established place of business in Hong Kong that are already registered as non-Hong Kong companies under Part 16 of the Companies Ordinance. As I mentioned earlier, one of the stated aims of the proposed re-domicile regime is to allow companies to preserve their business and legal identity after migrating their place of domicile to Hong Kong. In line with this policy intent, the FSTB is proposing to make arrangements under the Companies Ordinance and the Business Registration Ordinance to allow registered non-Hong Kong companies applying to re-domicile in Hong Kong to keep their existing company name and business registration number after the re-domicile process. For re-domicile applicant companies who are not registered non-Hong Kong companies, the FSTB clarified that filings and records of the company prior to re-domicile are regulated by the law of its original place of domicile. The company would only be required to observe the record-keeping and filing requirements under the company's ordinance from the date of its re-domicile. A company will be regarded as having re-domiciled to Hong Kong on the date the certificate of re-domicile is issued by the Registrar of Companies. Re-domiciled companies must then provide evidence of deregistration in their original place of domicile to the company's registry within 120 days from the date of re-domicile. If a company fails to do so within that time frame, the registration in Hong Kong will be revoked and the re-domicile application will be deemed unsuccessful. The FSTB will also allow companies to apply for a time extension where necessary. Existing financial institutions. Regarding companies with business operations in regulated sectors in Hong Kong, such as banks and insurance companies, the FSTB will also propose amendments to the Insurance Ordinance and the Banking Ordinance to include re-domiciled insurance companies and authorized institutions in their regulatory frameworks. The intention is to ensure that insurance companies and authorized institutions that re-domicile to Hong Kong will be subject to the same rules and regulations as insurance companies and authorized institutions incorporated in Hong Kong. In the consultation conclusions, the FSTB also advises insurance companies and authorized institutions looking to re-domicile to Hong Kong to consult the insurance authority or the HKMA to ascertain whether they meet the requirement for locally incorporated insurance companies or authorized institutions before submitting their redomicile application. The FSTB noted in the consultation conclusions that it will look into administrative arrangements to enhance coordination between the company's registry and the financial regulators in relation to the authorization process of financial institutions. The Safeguarding National Security Ordinance that came into effect in March 2024 gives the Chief Executive of Hong Kong the power to order companies incorporated in Hong Kong to be struck off if the company is believed to engage in activities that may endanger national security in Hong Kong. The FSTB will propose amendments to the relevant provisions to extend that power to cover redomiciled companies in addition to Hong Kong incorporated companies. The FSTB is preparing an amendment bill to amend the company's ordinance and other ordinances mentioned in the consultation conclusions and aims to submit the bill to LegCo as soon as is practicable. Moving on to the redomicile regimes of some other countries, you'll see on the slide a comparison of the redomicile regimes of various countries. The international norm is that countries that have an inward redomicile regime usually also allow outward redomicile. Under these regimes, no new legal entity is created subsequent to the inward or outward redomicile. An exception to this is Singapore, which allows inward redomicile only. It's also worth noting that for companies incorporated in Bermuda, outward redomicile is allowed only when the destination jurisdiction is one of the appointed jurisdictions or is approved by a Bermuda government minister. However, Hong Kong is not currently included as one of the appointed jurisdictions, making it uncertain whether Bermudan companies will be able to redomicile to Hong Kong under the proposed regime. On this slide, you'll see a summary of the redomicile regimes in some other jurisdictions, such as Bermuda, Malta, Gibraltar, and Cyprus, which also have certain restrictions on the exporting or destination jurisdiction. Gibraltar allows inward redomicile from and outward redomicile to relevant states that are approved by the Minister of Finance. Hong Kong is designated as a relevant state for these purposes, so companies incorporated in Gibraltar would be able to take advantage of Gibraltar's outward redomicile regime and Hong Kong's proposed inward redomicile regime to move their place of incorporation to Hong Kong. Now, looking at the redomiciliation regimes of some jurisdictions more closely. When comparing the inward redomiciliation regime in Singapore with the proposed regime in Hong Kong, the eligibility requirements are largely similar. One of the main differences is that Singapore has imposed an economic substance requirement. This requires the foreign company to satisfy at least two of the following criteria. The value of the company's total assets exceed 10 million Singapore dollars, the company's annual revenue exceeds 10 million Singapore dollars, or the company has more than 50 employees. If the applicant company is a parent company, the economic substance criteria will be assessed on a consolidated basis, while for a company that's a subsidiary, the criteria will be viewed on a single entity basis, unless the parent company is incorporated in Singapore or has redomiciled to Singapore. In terms of tax implications, companies will be taxable under Singapore's tax regime and may benefit from relevant tax treaties entered into by Singapore. Under Singapore tax laws, redomiciled companies may also receive a tax credit if the redomiciled company is subject to an exit tax on unrealized profits in its original domicile, if those profits are also subject to tax in Singapore. Turning to the redomicile regime in the UK, the UK government published a consultation paper in 2021 to seek views on a proposed redomicile regime to be introduced in the UK. The UK government proposed allowing inward redomiciliation and is now considering whether outward redomiciliation would be desirable. The consultation period ended in January 2022, and the UK government published a summary of the responses received in April of 2022. Recently, in October 2024, an independent expert panel on corporate redomiciliation was established to provide independent and non-binding advice to the UK government, and it published its report on the proposed legal framework, which supports two-way redomiciliation for companies to re-domicile into and also out of the UK. The Independent Expert Panel's report contains detailed suggestions on the practical logistics for a UK regime. For instance, suggested contents of the application form, filing of certain resolutions and agreements executed prior to the re-domicile, the discretion to be given to the UK authorities when considering applications, the process of determining the date on which the re-domicile becomes effective, suggested contents and template of the re-domicile certificate, detailed steps in the application process, accounting and financial reporting requirements, creditor protection, as well as various proposed amendments to the Companies Act 2006, the Corporation Tax Act, and other relevant legislation. To date, the UK government is still in the process of formulating the re-domicile regime and has not made amendments to its legislation yet. Similar to the position in Hong Kong, companies currently need to undertake complicated and costly restructuring processes to migrate their place of domicile to the UK, which may include creating a new UK entity and transferring the company's assets to the UK entity. The UK government noted the benefits of a re-domicile regime, namely promoting continuity of the company's operations while enabling a company to establish their place of incorporation in the UK. According to the UK government and the Independent Expert Panel, it's proposed that a re-domiciled company would be able to maintain its legal personality as the same entity and all property rights, criminal and civil liabilities, actions, authorities and charges effective or incurred prior to the re-domicile, and none of these would be affected by the re-domicile. Regarding the proposed requirements for companies looking to re-domicile in the UK, the UK government's proposals are largely similar to those of Hong Kong. In the consultation paper, the UK government proposes to allow the re-domicile of all types of company that have a corresponding corporate form under English company law. However, the Independent Expert Panel recommended that the UK government exclude companies limited by guarantee, given the Independent Expert Panel's view that there would not be a demand for companies to re-domicile as a community interest company, which is similar to the position being adopted in Hong Kong. The UK government has proposed additional eligibility requirements pertaining to the good standing of directors of the company. The applicant company would have to submit confirmation from the departing jurisdiction's competent authority that the directors are not subject to any legal or enforcement action. The director would also have to meet the requirements of English company law. Applicant companies would be required to submit a report prepared by the company and attested by its director, detail the legal and economic impact of the re-domicile on creditors, shareholders, and key stakeholders. Similar to the eligibility requirements in Hong Kong, the UK government and the Independent Expert Panel also consider that economic substance tests or size tests should not be necessary, as the UK government intends to attract a wide range of companies to re-domicile in the UK, including operating companies, holding companies, and intellectual property companies. Unlike the position that will be adopted in Hong Kong, the Independent Expert Panel is of the view that a resolution approving the re-domicile passed by a certain percentage of the members, if this is not required by the law of the departing jurisdiction, should not be required, as the issue of member protection should be governed by the law of the company's original place of domicile. The UK government also proposes to confer on the Registrar of Companies further powers to liaise with the company registries of the company's origin jurisdiction to verify submitted information and confirm applicant companies' good standing and solvency. For companies that submit false information, fail to meet re-domicile conditions, or fail to submit proof of deregistration, the UK Companies House would have the power to petition for the winding up of these companies. The Independent Expert Panel also recommended that offences under the UK Companies Act should apply to applicants providing false, misleading, or deceptive material information in the application forms. Companies would also be required to seek approval from the Financial Conduct Authority and other regulatory bodies if they wish to carry out regulated business activities in the UK. Regarding outward redomiciliation, the UK government noted that making an outward redomiciliation available would bring the UK into line with most of its peer jurisdictions. It would also give companies the option to further redomicile to other jurisdictions, which may attract more companies to domicile in the UK. Stakeholders, including the independent expert panel, have also indicated their support for an outward redomiciliation regime to allow two-way redomiciliation. If it were to allow outward redomiciliation, the UK government noted in the consultation documents that it would anticipate that the requirements for outward redomicile would include an exit fee, relatively high requirements for shareholder approval, a minimum length of operation in the UK, and requirements to settle all outstanding obligations and disputes in the UK before domiciling out. The independent expert panel emphasises that an outward redomicile mechanism should contain appropriate protection for existing members and creditors of a company, as well as UK national security interests. The independent expert panel's report sets out details of the suggested confirmations and information required from applicant companies, as well as the form of shareholder approval required. The independent expert panel also recommended including a requirement to appoint an authorised representative in the UK who would be responsible for accepting service of proceedings for 10 years after the date when a company redomiciles out of the UK. In terms of tax implications, currently companies are treated as UK resident for corporation tax purposes if they're incorporated in the UK or if their central management and control is located in the UK, unless they're treated as non-UK resident under a double tax agreement. The UK government is considering whether a company that redomiciles to the UK should be treated as tax resident by virtue of the redomicile, or whether it should not be treated as UK tax resident unless its central management and control is in the UK. Additionally, the independent expert panel has identified some points that the UK government, in their view, should consider. For example, the calculation of the tax base, cost of assets, controlled foreign companies, and loss importation. Similarly, for outward redomiciled companies that have their central management and control outside the UK, the UK government is considering whether they should cease to be UK tax resident subsequent to the redomicile, or whether these companies should remain UK tax resident until they're treated as non-UK resident pursuant to a double tax agreement. The independent expert panel also raised issues concerning the implications of corporate redomicile for the personal tax, inheritance tax, stamp duty, VAT, and customs tax regimes in the UK. The independent expert panel suggested that specific industry tax issues should be considered in the next phase after the redomicile framework under UK company law is set. So that brings us to the conclusion of the formal part of this webinar. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you enjoyed the webinar, and I look forward to seeing you again soon. Bye.